You are listening to
V for Vertigo,
episode 60.
Something kind of vertigo going on here. I've been seeing pebbles in my dreams. I've been laying scalped out here for hours in this swamp in New Orleans. I've been reading spells from books of magic, trying just to help blaze trails to you. Feeling like a loser, so, so tragic. Feeling like I'm left to preach at food. All the time's been moving, oh so slow. It's something kind of vertigo.
Hello and welcome to V for Vertigo, where I'm in the air everywhere, streaming on the vast world wide web. And this podcast is one man's journey into the world of all things Vertigo comics, because everything else is just picture books. I'm your host, Mark. I'm a Scrub Johnson. And this week's spoiler-filled review will cover Crossing Midnight, A Map of Midnight by Mike Carey and Jim Byrne. And I don't know. I'm just not feeling playing in major tournaments. Guys, you know what I did yesterday? I gamed. I don't know. I guess some of you follow me on Twitter. Whatever. And man, being in a room full of 100 plus people, 99% guys. Actually, there were a couple of cute chicks, surprisingly. I do them. Although one kind of wore too much makeup. And they were going for that, you know, the cute white girls were going for that, not emo, goth, kind of goth, kind of emo. I don't know. Well, you know, that black, heavy eyeliner shit, too much makeup. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Showing off their legs, which is always nice, but man. But anyway, so all those guys. Oh, it was terrible because where I was, it must have been like 90, 95. And then so you're inside, it's hot and stuffy. The air circulation is fucking terrible. They say there's air conditioning that was on. I saw it. I didn't feel it. And then when you go outside, boom, the sun. But it's still cooler than inside and it's less funky. But eventually, after 3 or 4 hours, you know, shade came and the breeze came. Man, I scrubbed out, though. I'm very, very, very disappointed. That's alright, I had my mudslide. Come on, I used to be good. It's not playing once every 3 or 4 weeks. Do I need practice? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Oh, well, it doesn't help that fuck Coulson. Him and his stupid. Out of 100 plus players, we're just going to have top 16. Oh, man. What happened to top 32? Or top 24? I've always been confused on how that works. But top 32. Yeah. Anyway. So I just not heard something, but read something really interesting. By interesting, I mean it sucks. Apparently, Marvel is going to do a reimagining, a reboot, a remake of quite possibly the best event that, yeah, it might have been everyone's first event. Maybe. The Infinity Gauntlet. Ew. It just sounds horrible. Now, I'm not against remakes in general, whether they be in movies. And I don't know how many remakes there are in comics. I cannot think of one. I can think of a bunch of stories being rehashed. But remakes, this might be the first remake. But man, Jim Starlin's rolling over in his grave. What? I don't know where to begin. Okay, this is the problem I had with this remake. And coincidentally, the new Nightmare on Elm Street remake. So, with Infinity Gauntlet, I read on CBR that, I guess there was a panel at some convention while I was looking for Vertigo news. This is one of the things that sounded interesting to me. And he said that he really enjoyed it. Yeah. And I believe he implied, or he might have even said, that he really enjoyed it when he was a kid. But that he hardly remembered it, and that he was going to reread it But then the editor or whoever dumbass idea this was said, no, we don't want you to reread it. We want this idea to be yours. And I'm like, oh, horrible, horrible. And this is the problem I have when people do remakes. They don't watch or read the original material, so they go off their very faulty memory. So, if you've read the Infinity Gauntlet, this is one of the reasons Thanos became my favorite character. Because he changes, right? So, if you read the Infinity Gauntlet, if you've read it, I bet you the things you remember is this. Oh, there was a cool-ass fight with all the villains, or Thanos, and then all the heroes, and teaming up, and then he kicked their ass, and I think maybe Warlock saved the day, and there was some interesting twist, and all that, and Silver Surfer was in there, and everyone was in there, blah, 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 blah. People, half the universe died. That's what you come away with, right? No, really. Try to remember. Okay. But no one remembers the end, except that Warlock got the gauntlet. And the end's probably the most important. There's a couple of pages where Thanos faked his death, and Warlock tracks him because, you know, he's pretty powerful. And then he explains to him. Thanos explains the problems with the gauntlet, but he more explains the problems with himself, because Warlock goes, this is the third time you've had ultimate power, and just let it go. Because you know you're not worthy of it. Thanos is like, yeah, that is true. I know you know what I'm going to say. And it is annoying, isn't it? But he's like, that's true. And like, next time, though, when I have power, I won't relinquish it so easily. And it's true. Which is why he does not try to actually obtain power until Marvel Universe, the end. And even then, he's tricked by Yahweh. But man, Jim Starlin's rolling over in his grave over this shit. But people don't seem to remember that last part where Thanos gets reflective and realizes that he doesn't want the power, and it's not about that. It's, hell, it's even more about the quest, but he doesn't want it. Like, it doesn't mean anything. He's got to have some reason to do it. So people don't remember that, and then you see all these stories with Thanos in it where he's trying to rob a bank for some strange reason, but he's just trying to get more power, and then he loses the, like, Kazar, or more recently the animals of the Marvel Universe, because he wants the gems back, even though the gems shouldn't work in unison anymore. It is another problem, by the way. But yeah, everyone has him go and try to get power again. Like, did you read Gauntlet? Did you read everyone, at least probably most people read the Infinity War afterwards. Less people read the Infinity Crusade, where he's fighting for good and doesn't want power. Where he reiterates that he's already had it, especially in war where he fights his doppelganger. It just totally goes over people. And the reason it's going to suck, because that's the problem. I don't know, people have no depth to him. And a lot of other characters, like Adam Warlock's depth. I enjoy the Marvel Cosmic now, but there's no depth. Starlin really built a lot. And they're doing the Thanos imperative, which will probably be the same thing over again. Maybe he'll try to wipe out the universe again. And it's like, dude, Starlin kind of did all that, but he built on it. Where Thanos started slowly as the villain and had a fleet and people and a cult and an army. Then he attained ultimate power. And then he realized, I don't really want that. And then he kind of gave up. But he still saves the universe whenever it's threatened. Yeah. People don't seem to remember any of this, like, stuff that he does. He's such a complex character. This is why he's one of my favorite. And he changes, unlike every other character, so it's weird. So, speaking of which, like, I want to see the new Nightmare, or no, New Nightmare is actually like the 7th movie, I believe. I want to see the new Nightmare on Elm Street, but I read an interview with both directors and actors, and I'm old, I'm 28, but apparently, these 20 some year old people, they've never seen the movie, or they did like once and they vaguely remember it. And for some strange reason, they don't rewatch it. And I think the director was the same way, but he's full of shit. Or maybe it was the screenwriters, because I've seen commercials where there are shots that are like shot for shot the original. But it's like, what are you doing? So you have parts that are based on the original, but you may not know that, or you don't understand why. And then you're not going to watch the original to understand why it was such a great film. Oh, it was horrible. And then the new characters. It's like, I could kind of understand that if you want to put a twist on your character, say, if you're the actor. But they changed Nancy to be a complete emo instead of the girl next door who gradually goes crazy and gets into some shit. So this character kind of starts off in a down. There's not really any growth here, from what I hear and from what I've been able to put together. And there's other things I've heard that are kind of spoilish, but not really. There's really... Freddy Krueger just makes no sense, motive-wise. And I hear... this is the real down here. I hear after the first death, there's a huge body count in this movie. Which, if you think about the original, there's not... one, two, maybe three or four people die. He spends most of his time terrorizing them. Maybe four, I don't even know. But apparently there's a huge body count. And that after the first death, all the other deaths are like, oh, that's it. Because he doesn't fuck with them. Which, to be fair, Freddy Krueger could easily kill all the kids in his dreams. In the dreams. Except for maybe the Dream Warriors? Masters? Something? Oh, whatever. But he fucks with them first. It's not really explained why he fucks with them. But, you know, he fucks with them. That's kind of the point. The torture, he likes it when he needs to. And that's the whole thing. That might be his whole thing, based on A New Nightmare mythology. But apparently he doesn't do that. And Freddy not doing that, it kind of sucks. And that really sucks, actually. So, if you ever do a remake, or if I ever do a remake, man, I'm going to watch or read the original to understand where it's coming from, or what the message they're trying to get across. I don't know what the message of the new Nightmare is. I haven't seen it. I might love it. Although, as much as I love Jackie or Haley Earl Haley, well, whatever. As much as I love him, man, he does not look as scary as Robert Englund, which would probably be why they drape, or at least most of the shots I've seen from the movie, his face is in shadow, which I was Englund's, but when you saw him, you're like, oh, shit, you scary dude. Alright, that's all I got about reimaginings. It's kind of jank, but hey, let's get right down to it.
And now it's time for the rundown.
Alright, so like I said before, I'm covering Crossing Midnight, A Map of Midnight by Mike Carey and Jim Fern. And this... I'm confused. I picked this up at WonderCon, and I saw the third one. I thought there were four trades. I really didn't feel like buying the third without buying the fourth. I really don't remember if I liked it. So I didn't. But I think there are only three, which means I'll read the next one in my order. Which won't be for another month or two. When I get my bonus. So, yeah. I don't know. This book's about... So the last thing, Toshi was captured by Aratsu. Oh man, my Japanese blows. And then he's training her to be his servant. Prentice? Something. Use her powers. So she's able to fly, walk through walls, and use a pair of scissors, magical scissors, to take people's dreams out because Aratsu is using them as a weapon, I believe. I don't know why it is, so I'm just guessing on the whys, but that's the what she does. And then she insults a face of death, the Gleaner. And she actually defeats her. Well, wins the game. Because you can't really defeat death. Well, you can. Well, you know, not defeat as in defeat, but in defeat as in that. Whatever. And that is most of the story in the trade. That is the really good story. Then we get on to the rather mediocre story. Because why Toshi's learning magic and shit in a different world where there's other Onizu, and whatever else. I don't know. Thanks to L5R, the only demon, the only word I really know in Japanese is Oni, which means demon, by the way. And they're like other creatures. But now you got Kai. Kai's busy trying to find Toshi. Wait, I'm not sure how I feel about that. The whole brother looking for the sister or sister looking for the brother story thing. It's not that it's been done before that bothers me. What bothers me is it might be better, at least from a guy's point of view. It might be better if the guy is trying to, or they're lovers, and they go and rescue her. Although, but then you got the whole damsel in distress thing. Well, you got that anyway here, I suppose. But it's always good, because she's not, she is in trouble, but she's learning stuff. And she lost the memory, which I forgot about that. Ba-dum-boom. No, I really did forget about that. But he's trying to look for her, but might have been better. But then you can't introduce love interests, which I think there are, or Kai has one in here. So, whatever. But he's looking for her in our world. What I like to call the real world. Free your mind. Well, I might put that on afterwards. Actually, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so his the story is pretty boring. But he does get a sword from the detective. Detective something another. He used to not work. Because Aratsu used to be a sword. And then his sword creator, I think Aratsu killed him or betrayed him. And then that detective who helped him out in the last issue and didn't talk, the mute, he's actually Kami. He's a Kami? He might be a Kami. But every word he speaks adds another year. But he turns back into a sword. I guess he was a sword too. I don't understand. I don't know enough about Japanese culture to understand people. Weapons being people. That sounds familiar though. I know other cultures have done that. Right? Maybe. I don't know. I'm actually more tempted to learn, unlike Fables. His plot is really boring. And then he runs into some, I don't know if it's an Omi, some monster. That's, well, you're not a monster. Thing that's killing young girls who's giving up their innocence. This is like some weird Japanese thing. What is it called? Injo Kosai. Reward dating or compensating dating. You think it's prostitution, but it's not. And it also has in UK. I mean, it can be prostitution for some people, but girls dress up as girls and then guys could pay them, or buy them the latest fad while they get their rocks off over on the phone or on other ways. It's hard to explain and it's really weird. It's really trippy. Yeah. Man, Japanese are weird. Yeah, he defeats the thing that's killing him. And then at the end, Toshi, which I forget what name she's going by now. Aratsu realizes that Kai is looking for Toshi. And then has Toshi be an assassin and says he's going to give her back her memories if she kills the assassin who has the same face. Wonder how that's going to end. So, that's the story. But before I talk more about it, I want to say the first thing that struck me when I opened the book was the art. This is weird. I went to WonderCon, since I had already read the first trade, it was 99% sure I was going to pick up the other two, or what I thought, three trades eventually, and it's Mike Carey. I didn't feel the need to look through it, so I just bought it, but then I opened it up, I was like, whoa. This is some good art. I don't remember being in this good. I was very stunned. Because it's so damned colorful and vibrant. And the pictures just seem to jump out at me. Now, the sad thing is the artist changed. But they're still good, too. But I think they're not as good as Fern. Now I'm assuming that the names listed are not more importance, but maybe more importance, but more like guys that did the issue in order. Yeah. And it's been so long since I read the first trade. I don't even remember what it's called. A Map at Midnight did a good job at jumpstarting my brain. Like, boom, 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 boom. Like, it did some good things in recap without being exposition-y, like Chris Claremont. So, that was good. I mean, actually, you don't need to read the first one. I actually found the first one. I don't know if stranger's the right word, but weaker. Maybe it's the whole Yakuza thing. And then, some weird. There's like a shootout and they lived somehow. Now, I suppose as realistic, or as steeped in realism and Japanese folklore as Crossing Midnight is, and the way the art is, the one thing that isn't realistic, Japanese people don't really look like Japanese people. And I don't mean that in the racist, they look like white people type way, as they all do in Why the Last Man. I mean in the fact that it could just be around here, or what I see on news and TV, YouTube and video games and Tokyo Game Show, bear shit like that. And when I think of Japanese people, at least young Japanese people, you know, think of the highlights, the spiked hair, the streaks, piercings, well, maybe not tattoos. You get associated with the Yakuza. You know, the Super Saiyan type shit. That's what, and then there's that guy who dresses up as a clone trooper and dances. Well, that's what I'm used to seeing. The guys that drive the rice rockets. The guys in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. There aren't really any of those people here. The young people, I mean, aside from the cute girls that dress up in the school light outfits or whatever. But even they look like normal with the whole, you know, they're very Asian with the black hair and everything. Instead of the weird look, whatever you want to call it here. Oh. Anyway. Now, A Map of Midnight gets a lot deeper here. I thought the story was going to feature just the two kami. As in Aratsu and the guy who's fighting against Aratsu, who has the fat kid as his servant. I don't remember his name. But it got a lot bigger here. There were all sorts of mythical creatures, and ones I had never heard of before. Like that monkey guy who's killing the kids because of the innocent thing. Or the people that fed off hate. I think I like that aspect the best out of all of it. Now, as much as I enjoyed Crossing Midnight, there was some strange shit about it. If I ever interview Mike Garrigan, unfortunately, we didn't really cover Crossing Midnight because I only read the first trade. I want to ask him some some questions, like the part with the gleaner. Now, I know he loves his Japanese horror, but there was a scene where Toshi was grabbed by a bunch of tentacles. And then I was like, is the next page she going to be raped by them? Am I watching some hentai? Some Nightmare Campus? The Blue Girl? A demon beast invasion? I've watched entirely too much hentai. I actually prefer it over anime. Yeah, and then, that's too much information. But I was like, what? I was like, where'd you get that idea there, Gary? Yeah. Okay, now, why this book is called Grassy Midnight, it really has to do with Toshi, at least in this trade. The last trade was probably more of a balance, if my memory serves. But Toshi has the far more interesting storyline. And she's lost her memory. And she could do stuff. And Kai can not be touched by blades. And actually, he can undo magic stuff. But undoing magical things by touching them in our world, where there are really no magical things, yeah, you're not going to get really far with that power. It'd be like being a telepath on Ferenginar. Ooh, I got a bit too nerdy right there. Maybe I would have liked Kai's story if there was more Yakuza or something. I don't know, just, it was boring. And then that investigator sword told his story, and that was interesting, but it's like, okay, Kai, well, are you going to do something? And then he looked for his sister, putting up poster ads, and it's like, oh, all right, you're looking for her in the normal way. Despite the fact what you've seen, heard, and done. Right. And then he got with that those quote unquote date girls with the teenage things, and then you're like, where the fuck did this come from? That came out of left field. I mean, that's when his plot story starts to pick up. But then you're like, man, this is kinda weird. Too weird for him. And I personally didn't like it. It seemed very coincidental. You could believe it happening to Toshi, since she's captured by a sword. I don't know. Or she's in a different world, but then Kai, it's like, wow, it's very weird. Now, when it came to the ending, I didn't particularly care for it. You can kind of see where it was coming. Oh yeah, she's gonna fight her brother because she lost her memories. And then she kills him, she's not gonna want her memories. Which would be interesting, showing the aftermath of that. But then she wouldn't want her memories, so she wouldn't remember what she just did, or the reason why she felt sad, and it's one of those like conundrums or something or another. Well, yeah, that's all I got to say about the book. There's one thing that I felt that was out of place, and what I didn't particularly care for, is at the end of the book, Carrie has his explanation for that whole thing he added with the, I guess it is technically teenage prostitution, even if there may not be any sex involved. But I thought, if he didn't explain any of it, it would have been a hell of a lot stronger. And I wonder why he did, though. That would be another question to ask him. Did he feel the need to justify why he wrote that? Or did he get complaints? Because I'm just going to guess here that there was no letter in single issues. Was it single issues? Yes, it was. There were no no letter. There might have been. Could be wrong. I don't know. So, I have nothing against Gary. But I do tired of people apologizing for things when they really shouldn't apologize. Which is why, one of the reasons I won't apologize. Slight side note. My friend wanted me to apologize to his best friend, my former friend. And I was like, nah, dude. I only apologize when I mean it. And I don't really mean it. And I have no idea why I would be friends with him. Or why I was. So there you go. My Mark Critics score. I'm a very cold man. Okay, my Mark Critics score. This is very hard. I wanted to give it a 4. I thought it might be a 5. But then Kai's story got in the way. And it was like, wah, 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 wah. I mean, that did pick up, even though it didn't seem tied into it. So I'm going to give it a 3.5. Borderline 3, maybe. 3.5. Okay. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. As always, appreciate it if you left some feedback on iTunes. Next week's pick will be Northlanders, The Cross and the Hammer. See, with that title, it feels like you just got to pronounce it. The Cross and the Hammer. It's like very manly. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions, email me at vertigocast@gmail.com or go to thecomicforums.com. See what's coming up. Visit the website at vforvertigo.blogspot.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/hellsfire. And remember, Atlanta Hawks fans, you really, really suck. Game 7, no whiteout with the free t-shirts. Sitting down the game, barely cheering. Oh, why couldn't the Bucks win?
And like that,